So that pretty well settles that issue. Okay.
Can I kind of give an explanation that maybe people would understand?
Well, that's pretty clear, I thought.
The court, by definition, is the person and suit of the sovereign.
Right.
When those two come together, they create a fiction called a tribunal, of whom the sovereign is in control. That's how, and the tribunal is just as fictional as any other court you're going to be in, but however, it takes the person in suit of the sovereign to have them, to have that tribunal at your disposal.
Right, but even though he's the person, even though it's the person in suit of the sovereign does not have complete control unless he's the only one in the court. So if he hires a staff, then the sovereign becomes subject to his own court. Okay, so that's got to be careful who you hire. And when you're subject to your own court, don't grant any judicial functions to the members of your court. Okay? Now, as the, it's true that a court is the person and suit of the sovereign, but that still does not define what kind of court. So there's many different kinds of courts. There's equity courts, admiralty courts, court of the exchequer, and courts of record. So we specifically have said here that this is a court of record. So that's what, that gives you the proper setting. Now, why is a court of record so important? The reason is very simple. It is the one court that is acknowledged by the Constitution. You see, other courts are not acknowledged by the Constitution. You can have any court you want. Run it any way you want. It's your house, so to speak. But if you come up with a judgment and you want that judgment to be enforced with the help of the government itself is restricted. It can only enforce a judgment that comes out of an equity court or a court at law. The Constitution says that the judicial power of the United States is available for something to do with any court at law or in equity. Well, at law means common law, and equity means, of course, equity. So, all right, so anyway, then we name all the defendants, okay, who are each summoned to answer the said plaintiff in a plea of trespass and trespass on the case. And we kind of covered what trespass and trespass on the case was. And so then we have a little summary, the introduction. All right, so let's go back here for the overview. So you can see first we named the parties and the type of court, the forum in other words. And then we have the introduction. In the introduction, we write an overview of the lawsuit so that the reader has a perspective when he reads the details later. Then there's the actual body of the action. And you specify a cause of action, a set of facts which entitles the plaintiff to the relief claimed. Okay? And we got a little footnote here, which shows up there. Just a little footnote. Right. Or we can go down to it where, see, that crunches it all together. But if we go to the footnote, it's not crunched so badly, but it's still crunched. Okay, but basically, this is all the case law that supports, or the authorities, you might say, that supports exactly what a cause of action is. So, it says that it's the fact or facts which give a person a right to judicial relief. That pretty well summarizes it right there. The legal effect of an occurrence in terms of redress to a party to the occurrence. A situation or state of facts which would entitle a party to sustain action and give him a right to seek a judicial memory in his behalf. A remedy in his behalf. So it goes on. I mean, this is all the technical definitions of what a cause of action is, but basically it boils down to that you tell the story. This is what happened. This is how I got injured. And now, and then there's the obligation. So we'll go back.
I don't recall reading that reading that in Aurora's case. Did you?
Well, actually, the if we go across over here.
Could you repeat the question?
He says he didn't. Yeah, go ahead. Repeat the question.
Well, I'm just saying I didn't recall reading that in Aurora's case.
Well, here it is. Each. Whoops. Well, I didn't put the footnote. That footnote I created for that to explain what a cause of action is.
Yeah. Well, I like that.
Yeah, but the cause of action was put in. So here's the introduction. Each kidnapper exceeded his jurisdiction by either directly through an agent or in concert with another did cause Plaintiff Robert to be unlawfully and forcibly. I changed the names to protect the guilty. But this is the summary of it, okay? And it's reasonably long, you know? Yeah. Oh, did I leave her in there?
No,
did I?
Yeah.
I thought I got that. He's cheating there and so on. Oh, there, with another. All right. Where's
against
her?
Against your will. Carried away against your will.
How about that? All right.
Didn't volunteer, did
you? Didn't volunteer. Nope. Says against his will.
I thought that was in paragraph ahead of that.
Okay. Did I hear a confession?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure where I saw her.
Got women on your mind, apparently. Okay, well, anyhow, so you have an introduction. And then in the introduction here, you basically just a little summary, or maybe even a big summary of what's going on. And then in the body of the action, you state a set of facts which entitles the plaintiff to the relief claimed. And then I go into detail here on this template of the different common law causes of action. So here's trespass, injury committed with force, actual or implied, immediate and not consequential. If property is involved, then property was in actual or constructive possession of the plaintiff at the time of injury. Trespass on the case is the form of action by which a person seeks to recover damages caused by an injury unaccompanied with force or which results indirectly from the act of the defendant. It is more generally called simply case. The word case by itself means trespass on the case. Trespass and trespass on the case are supplementary to each other, and it may be said that in general, trespass on the case lies where no other theory or form of action is available, though it is sometimes concurrent with other forms. So in Aurora's case, we sued for both trespass and trespass on the case. What one misses, the other one gets. So... then we have, yeah.
You don't have to be specific.
Okay. No, you have to be the question is, you don't have to be specific. And the answer is, yes, you do have to be specific. You have to say what happened, what the injury was, but sometimes it's a little hard to know whether you have injury, violence involved or not. Because, see, if you're, let's say you're stopped. You're on the road, and you're stopped by a policeman. Well, technically, that's an arrest. Okay, you're not free to go. Even if he says you're free to go, just try it. Mm-hmm. People found themselves arrested when they said, you know, tried to walk off after the cops said they were not under arrest. So, when you are arrested, there is the threat of force. But it you know, you don't know for sure, so you call it both trespass and you call it trespass on the case. Now, an interesting thing is this. There's another word that's used often in lawsuits. It's count. You have count one, count two, count three, and so forth. Well, what you can do is you have a cause of action. Now, in the general sense, a count is a cause of action. Okay? So that's in the general sense. But you can label something as a cause of action, say what the facts are, and then in the count, you have your theory as to why that's wrong. Now, you could have a second count on the same cause of action with a completely different theory, and the second theory could be in total conflict with the first theory. Doesn't matter. It's okay to have conflicting theories. If you don't get them one way, you'll get them the other. That's basically what it boils down to. But so you can have conflicting theories in your different counts. It's okay. That's a long-settled question in law. There's also, you can have several counts which are basically separate causes of action. Not even the same facts, different facts. Okay? So, what it really comes down to is how you choose to label things. So, now there is a rule, long-standing common law court rule, court procedure rule, against duplicity. That means that you don't want to be repetitive. You've said something once, that should be enough. No need to repeat it. So, if you have different counts and they're basically saying the same thing each one, then that could be thrown out. Okay? And even if your court says it's okay, you might have trouble getting the cooperation of the rest of the world. So you don't want to be duplicitous in your writings. So, but you can have the same facts and different theories as to why it's wrong. Whatever. For example, you could have one where you call it a misdemeanor and another one you could call it a felony. That's if you were running a criminal case. But anyhow. Okay, you got Trover. Basically, that's a form of action which lies to recover damages against one who has without right converted to his own use goods or personal chattels in which the plaintiff has a general or special property. So, bottom line, somebody had your property, had your TV set, and sold it. You lent it to him expecting to get it back, and instead he sold it. That's called conversion. And so this becomes an action for Trover. Detinue, a form of action which lies for the recovery in specie. In specie means of money, I think. Of personal chattels from one who acquired possession of them lawfully but retains it without right, together with damages for the detention. So, you're basically suing for the item, or for the money, I guess. That's the specie. And then you also want additional money because he detained it. You want damages for that. Replevin is when you want the actual object back. And replevin does not have damages. It's simply an action to get back the property. Some people have used replevin very successful in getting properties back from that the police have confiscated. Okay. Debt basically has to do with somebody owes you money. That's simple. Okay. It doesn't matter why they owe you money. It's just the fact that they do. Let's say somebody signed a note. You sold them a property and they signed a note to pay you later. Now they owe you the money. It absolutely makes no difference what it was you sold to him. Okay? The fact of the matter is that he owes the money, so that you sue for debt only. Now, I suppose if you sold him drugs that were illegal, he could come back with and say, well, you had no rights, you know?
Illegal according to whom?
Well, the government... Well, it is a principle of law that if you're doing something illegal, you can't expect to be rewarded for it. So, or unlawful. If not illegal, it's unlawful.
Statutorily unlawful?
No, unlawful, you meant illegal. Unlawful automatically means common law. So, let's see. We have covenant. Covenant is where you have a contract that's sealed with an actual seal. Or, as somebody brought up, a signet ring. You know, on wax. If you have a contract sealed, you're trying to enforce the contract, covenant is the action. On the other hand, where is it? Here it is. Special assumpsit K is for the recovery of damages for the breach of a simple contract, either expressed or implied in fact. It is often used to denote an express or explicit contract as contrasted with a promise implied in law. So some contracts are assumed. I think there's an assumed contract where a child is expected to be supported by the parents. I think that's a contract that's understood in law. There's a little side note, by the way. Slavery has been outlawed. You cannot force a person to work, okay? And also, debtor's prison has been outlawed. You cannot put a person in jail because they owe a debt, okay? But there's an exception to that, yes? Well, if you're convicted, you've lost everything. You know, you are now in jail. And yeah, there they can use your labor, okay? But on the outside world, where you supposedly are free, then slavery has been outlawed. But there, as I was trying to get into, there's an exception to that. You named one of the exceptions. The other exception is that a parent must support the child. And the government can force a person to go to work and can enslave the person for purposes of supporting the child. That is an ancient law that is universally recognized. Nobody knows when that law got started, but it goes way back. Okay, so that's definitely old common law as well as modern law. So, let's see. Going back up to where we were.
Is there such a thing as threat of conversion?
What on...
Written threat of conversion.
Threat on conversion?
Threat of conversion.
Threat of conversion?
Someone's,
well, I think that's called extortion. If you don't do something, I'm going to convert this.
Yes.
Yeah, where's extortion fit in the common law? What do we call it?
Well, since I cannot make up something right away, I'll just say trespass on the case. Yeah. That covers everything else. But maybe something here fits. You know, you read through these things and decide what fits your case. Account, the action of account lies where one has received goods or money for another in a fiduciary capacity to ascertain and recover the balance due. You don't know what he owes you, but if you sue for an account, that particular suit, you can require the person to give you an accounting so that you know how much he owes you. I think where that would be useful is where a parent designates one of the siblings to be a trustee, and then he decides to keep all the money and not give any to the other siblings. That happens a lot. But I doubt the attorneys do much of this account suing, because they don't deal with common law anyway, even though they're attorneys at law. Okay. Now, jurisdiction in equity, you have jurisdiction concurrent with the courts of law in taking over matters of account. In addition to these peculiar grounds of jurisdiction, equity will grant a discovery in cases of account on the general principles regulating discoveries and will afterwards proceed to grant full relief in many cases. See, the deal is, you remember I said with common law, you provide all the facts up front. Okay? All the affidavits, all the photographs, evidence, whatever. Well, in account, you don't know what the person owes you. So you have to sue on account. But you see, under common law principles, you don't have discovery available. Okay? You have to present all your evidence. Well, equity now takes over, because in equity, they do have discovery. And you remember, this goes back to the old courts in England, where the courts were separate. You had to go to the king and get an authorization to sue in equity. Okay? You had to go to the king and say, look, I don't have any remedy at law, so I have to come to the equity court. And this is a good example. A count is a good example of where you have no remedy at law. Because it's true with a count, you can sue on a count, but in common law, there's no discovery. So how can you sue for what you don't know is owed you? You can't under common law. That's why you have to switch to equity. So equity has concurrent jurisdiction, and it can fill in where the common law could not. Now, when you're the sovereign in your own court, you can operate in equity or at law. And I've talked all about at law because that's the cleanest, simplest way for us to go. But you can switch to equity.
At the same time, in the same case?
Yeah, if it calls for it. But understand that your primary pathway is common law. Okay? Equity is the exception. So a court of equity, or the common law court, can only operate in equity as a side issue, not as a main issue. Okay? So, okay, let's see. Well, then, in the case of account, equity fills in that gap by bringing in discovery. Basically, the concept is this. Well, one of the things you got to understand is that there were two common laws. There was the common law of the king, and there was the common law of the people. So you have this big picture. You got common law, and you have equity law. So the common law was the law of the people. The equity law was over in this other area where the king was. Now the king is operating under the big equity, but then he subdivides his powers, and one he calls common law and the other one he calls equity. So that helps to confuse you, okay? Because now you have two common laws and two equities. So you have to know, are you talking about big common law and big equity, or are you talking about little common law, king's common law and king's equity? Now the king's common law operated by statute. And the equity, and the judges in the king's court were called judges in the common law courts. But in the equity courts, they weren't called judges, they were called chancellors. So whenever you hear of a chancellor, and by the way, it's correct to call a judge a chancellor if he's operating in equity, which they all are. Okay? So the statutory laws in California, in all the states, the statutory laws are actually equity because they're not common law. So, but the concept is, see, this is all, the whole purpose of this is to confuse you, I think. Confuse all of us. So you go to the king and you say, or actually you go to the equity court and you say to the equity court that I have no remedy at law. That's why I'm coming to you. So they look at it, consider it, and decide, okay, we'll let your case in. We'll consider your case. So the chancellor in the equity court is the king's right-hand man. He's acting for the king. And in that position, he can make law on the spot. So you have no remedy at law. There is no statute to cover it. So the chancellor looks at it, and the chancellor says, oh, well, we need a rule here, and they make up the rule. And that's where all your case law comes in. And so but that system has been operating so long, it's like its own system of rules. Its own case law, in other words. And that gets very complicated. That's almost as bad as the statutory situation. But, yeah.
Why would you want to do that if, as a sovereign in your own court, and you as a tribunal, you can make up the rules that apply?
Because you're trying to put on a good show for the rest of the world.
So you only do it when you know the outcome and where it's certain.
You only do it when you have no other choice in your own mind. I mean, there's, you know, you try to put on a good show, so you try to use existing rules. See, I bring in existing rules all the time. All right? In fact, we'll get to that in a moment. Let's see. I'm going through all the items here. There's various various, there's the 11 common law actions, which I've listed in more detail here, so you can refer to it later when you're trying to structure a case. Then we have a second cause of action, trespass on the case. Third cause of action is also trespass on the case, but it's vicarious liability. The first one was, didn't label it, but there was a second cause of action. The vicarious liability, what that means is, did I footnote that? I don't think I did. Basically, what vicarious liability is that you're connected to the problem. And because you're connected to the problem, even though you were not directly involved, you still have the responsibility. I'll give you a good example. It's a universal principle that government makes the laws, but they're not suable. Okay? They have sovereign immunity. Well, for the sake of discussion, let's say they're sovereign and they have sovereign immunity. Okay? As long as they're just making the rules and stop there, yeah, they have sovereign immunity because they haven't done anything. They've just said to the people, look, this is how you do things. But now the state of California went a step further. Not only do they make up the rules called the vehicle code, but they have a quality control force out there called traffic cops. They have educational programs. They have testing procedures. They are involved. And because they're involved, they've lost their sovereignty. Now, the average accident is less than $15,000. So what's the minimum insurance that you have? $15,000, right? That's how they arrived at that figure. At least I assume so. Okay? Just coincidental, right? But they, you see, they are liable. And we have a case where this guy got hit by a car. He was on his bicycle, and he resulted in like $50,000 or $100,000 in medical bills. Okay, and so he sued not only the driver, but he also sued the state because the state licensed the driver. Not only did the state license the driver, but the driver was a licensed minor. And the state specifically has said that the minor is not responsible for more than $15,000. There's a statutory limit to his liability. Not only that, but the parent is also responsible, but the state has said the responsibility is limited to $15,000. Not only that, but the state has said the aggregate total between the two, driver and parent, is $15,000. So, what does that make the state? It makes the state a third-party intervener. Now, we don't mind if you intervene as long as you're willing to pick up the tab. Okay? Not yet. But we're ready to file the judgment as soon as Ron lets me. He keeps me busy doing other things. But, but yeah, we've got a judgment waiting to be filed here. If I can just sit down and write it, you know. But that's our point, is that they're third party interveners. They are involved in the process, so they have no sovereignty. Plus, they have no sovereignty anyway. Okay.
Because they're involved.
Sure, they're involved. They're an active part of this whole process. They're not just setting rules. They're actually involved. And they demurred. Yeah, so we're happy when every time somebody demurs, we're happy because they admit the facts. See, that's the key. They admit the facts.
Excuse me, Mr. Bill. What I enjoy the most is when I ask you to explain to me more thoroughly, when they cross your line and you get hurt, that's when they lost their sovereignty.
You mean when they take the initiative, they lose their right to have you, to require you to go to the court of claims. When they become a party to the action and they're involved and you sue back, there's no court of claims requirement.
Yeah.
I know that in their demurs they said that there was a requirement, but there isn't, not under that circumstance. Okay, so then we have the law of the case, okay? And the law of the case is